tuning in to hear our Urbanite Radio story, Under Pressure, about the environment and our water system here in Baltimore. We preempted it to bring you the conversations we had today with those who represent us in Congress. To hear our Urbanite Radio conversation with Kimberly Burgess and Bill Stack from the article Under Pressure, just go to our website, steinershow.org, and enjoy the conversation. Thanks. Here we are right now, back on Capitol Hill right now in Congressman Andy Harris's office. On the eve of the vote, he'll be dashing out. We'll be coming back to finish our conversation with him later in the afternoon. And Congressman Harris, thank you for inviting us in.
My pleasure having you.
We only have a couple of minutes, so let's jump into it. First, originally you were opposed to Congressman Boehner's bill, but now you're supporting it. What happened?
No, I'm only supporting it if it gets recoupled to a balanced budget amendment. I'm not sure that the final wording of the bill gets us there, so I'm waiting to see whether there are any other minor changes going to be made before we vote on it this evening.
So when you walk out of this office and go down to the well...
Well, we're not voting on that bill yet.
Okay.
We're just voting on the rule to
on the
bring
rule.
The bill to us later.
And
so I'll support the rule to bring it to us later, but... Again, I'll have to see what the very final wording is.
Now, the politics of that, I mean, Congressman Boehner has been attempting to, as the press puts it, rein in the new Republican congressional representatives, as you're one of them. So talk about that debate going on inside the Republican Party and within your colleagues. What's the essence and crux of that?
Well, I think what you've got is you've got a class of 87 on our side of the aisle, 87 freshmen, some of which who haven't been through a legislative process before. I've served 12 years in the state Senate, so I understand the legislative process. I've seen times when we're told that, you know, we don't have time to do anything, we have to do something, or the things can't be changed or can be changed. So I think it's a little more stressful for someone who hasn't been through it before. To me, this boils down to a very, very simple philosophic position. I mean, I think a balanced budget amendment is absolutely the key that gets us out of future crises like this. And we have to think of a way to create a path to passage of that balanced budget amendment.
Now, the balanced budget amendment, earlier another congressman said to us that the balanced budget amendment really was a way where we could, Congress could come in and take a lot out of Medicare, take a lot out of those kinds of programs in the country, but that it would, with a simple majority, but it will require a two-thirds majority if they decided to do something like, let's say, add on to the tax of the, as the Democrats are putting it, of the wealthiest in the country.
Sure, but I'm not insisting, and that's what's called the, you know, what we would call the optimal balanced budget amendment that puts spending and taxation controls in. I really would be very happy with just a straightforward, what we call the simple, plain balanced budget amendment.
What does that mean?
That means that you just say that your revenues cannot exceed your expenditures in a given year unless you're in a period of war.
So, now what's the debate on that inside your caucus?
Well, I think we have House Joint Resolution 2, and I think we have the overwhelming majority actually co-sponsoring that bill. I think we get virtually every vote on that bill. That will actually probably come up for a vote tomorrow. And I suspect we get every single Republican vote, and I wouldn't be surprised if we got 2, 3, or even 4 dozen Democrat votes on that bill.
Now, the Senate Majority Leader and the Senate itself, the majority of the Senate, has said that the Boehner bill, no matter how it comes over, is dead on arrival.
Well, again, I've been in legislatures before. I've heard that before also, where things are said to be dead on arrival that all of a sudden get resuscitated. I'm a physician. I've seen things get resuscitated before, and this is not going to be an exception.
But while your patient's asleep, we want them to be resuscitated
right.
To wake up. But what I'm saying is that the Senate side is saying that the Boehner bill is not going to happen. That's not the way it's going to end up. So the question is, what do you think happens over this weekend, and what's going to happen if the Boehner bill passes and the Senate says no? Where do the House and Senate go to prevent this deficit foreclosure on America?
Well, I think it's posturing going on right now. I think that the Senate will finally agree to do what it's sent down here to do, which is to consider a piece of legislation passed by the House, amend it, and send it back. I think there's plenty of time for the Senate. They may not pass the Boehner bill as it is, but I think that what they're going to do is take it, consider it, amend it, and pass it back to us for consideration.
Now, I suppose that consideration has to do with the deadline of December, saying that we're not going to do a partial raising the debt limit until December. We want this thing to go to 2012. That seems to be one of the major points taken.
It is because of the insistence, and I think the agreement, that we really ought to have a dollar in cuts for every dollar in increase in the debt ceiling. we don't have enough time to find that. We can all agree on the first trillion. I mean, you know, I don't want to make it sound minor, but we've kind of agreed on the first trillion. It's that second and third trillion that are difficult, and we can't get that second and third trillion. Look, the Reid bill plays smoke and mirrors. It says we're going to save $1.4 trillion from war savings in Iraq and Afghanistan that we've already built into our expectations. That's not a new savings. What America's looking for is where are we going to be efficient in things that we've already not already planned to cut back. So the Reid bill doesn't have real savings of that second and third trillion dollars. That's what we would need to do to satisfy the bond rating agencies. I mean, S&P and Moody's are not looking for smoke and mirrors. They're looking for real decisions, hard decisions, about where you save. Those decisions take months, not days or hours. That's why the Boehner bill delays those until a commission can consider them.
So, I mean, one of the arguments that Democrats are making in the last conversation we've had is that to just pass it through to December creates instability in the economy, instability in the markets, that we are right back where we started from in just less than 6 months. That what we need is a long-term stability and then debate out. We need to save the country at the moment and then debate where it goes from here.
Well, let's face it. If we don't have this debt ceiling debate in front of us, we're not going to continue the debate. People will just not be serious about long-term spending habit changes. The balanced budget amendment, if you look at what S&P and Moody's are looking from us, they're looking for whether this Congress has the will to change into the future the way Washington spends and taxes. And the only thing that does that is a balanced budget amendment. We've proven year after year. I disagree with the president. He says we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We can do the work. The evidence is we haven't done the work. We haven't done it for decades. That's how we. If you look at the buildup of our debt, it's occurred now over 20, 30 years. The real buildup started in 1980 when Ronald Reagan built up during the Cold War. He started accumulating debt. It accelerated during the Clinton and Bush years and then had an incredible acceleration over the past 3 years. The empiric evidence is Congress isn't doing its work. It's not going to do its work. So, unfortunately, we really have to amend the Constitution to solve this problem.
So, when you look at S&P and Moody's, some people would argue, are they the ones who are running our country? Or are the American people running the country?
Well, at this
Who's running our country?
You know, there's a line that says, you know, if you owe me $100, you know, it's your problem. If I owe you $1 million, it's your problem. S&P is now controlling the potential downgrade. That potential downgrade has billions of dollars in effect on our ability to borrow and billions of dollars expansion of our deficit. We really have to pay attention to what they say. They are the third person in the room, and we let them in the room. You're right. Under normal circumstances, you and I grew up, there was nothing like the U.S. Treasury. If somebody came and said, what do you invest in? That's the safest thing in the world.
Treasury bonds.
Treasury. Now we've let a third party in the room because it's not so clear to investors in the world that the U.S. Treasury is the safest thing in the world. So we have to listen to the people who are commenting on how safe our bond is. That person shouldn't be in the room, but they're in. We've got to deal with them.
But if everything goes bust on Monday night,
we've got problems.
We have huge problems.
We have problems. And that's why we should pass something that tells the American people and the bond rating agencies we're going to solve this problem. I believe that's a balanced budget amendment.
But if Democrats and Republicans can't come to agree upon that between the House and the Senate.
Well, we came to agree on it in the House because we sent a cut, cap, and balance bill to the Senate that the Senate is sitting on. Strangely enough, I fully expected that what the Senate would do is take cut, cap, and balance, which included a provision for a balanced budget amendment, and amend it and send it back for discussion. So, I'm a little surprised that the Senate didn't do that.
You've got to go vote, and hopefully we'll see you later this afternoon
later.
And talk more about this.
Thanks.
Thank you, Congressman.
Okay.
Mark Steiner here in the halls of Congress with Dutch Rubensberger, our congressman who's in and out of the votes. Dutch, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. So, good to see somebody from Baltimore.
Yeah.
The city.
From the city.
The city, too, right.
So tell us about what's going on at this very moment. I mean, what are you voting on now?
Right now, well, we're voting on amendments on an appropriations bill. But we did, Boehner put a bill out that's going to be voted on later today. And the bill basically talks about how they're going to deal with the issue of the deficit. Now, the problem that we have as Democrats with this bill that Boehner has on the floor is the fact that it's short-term. We already know that the markets since Friday have, the Dow Jones has dropped 400 points. And we know that the bond rating agencies have said if we don't resolve this issue on a long-term basis, that we could lose our AAA bond rating. That would be very serious to our country, to every family in the United States. That means we'll pay more for our debt. If you have a credit card, you're going to pay a higher interest rate. If you have a car loan, if you have an adjustable rate mortgage, and if you have an adjustable rate mortgage, you have problems right now if we don't resolve this issue. The market volatility is going to really hurt us as a country. And here is an example. You have to give the Republicans credit for the fact that they have put the issue of spending on the table. Who would have thought 2 months ago or 3 months ago that a Democratic president would agree to cut $4 trillion in 10 years? So, you know, that is an issue that has been resolved. In my point of view, to my friends on the other side of the aisle, you need to declare victory. You know, you've dealt with the issue of spending, and we're dealing with it as a body, and the president has, and Congress will. But that's not enough. Now, the concern, too, is that if, in fact, we lose our AAA bond rating, then we will pay more for our debt, for this deficit that we have. And if we do that, any monies that we cut, we will not receive the benefit of cutting it because of the fact we're paying more money for our interest on this large deficit that we do have. So what's the process is that we will then, this bill will pass. I believe every Democrat, whether you're liberal, conservative, or moderate, will vote against the Boehner bill. It will then go to the Senate. And when it goes to the Senate will then make a determination whether they agree, and they will vote on that. From what I understand, that Reid feels that this Boehner bill would not pass because it's a short-term bill. It's not in the best interest. Why do we want to continue this debate, this agonizing debate, the instability of the markets, both in the United States and internationally? You know, why do we want to redo this again? Let's fix it now and let's move on, because the number one priority for our country now is creating jobs.
Now, very quickly, before you have to jump back into the hall.
I can come back now.
Congressman Harris said just a little bit ago when we were visiting with him that, look, we have to have it short term because this Congress has never been able to deal with this question of our deficits and balancing a budget. And if we don't do it short term, we're going to be right back here. We have to deal with it now and not let it linger and go on.
I think right now that the Reid plan, the Senate plan, has a cutting of at least $2.2 trillion. And that's a good start. Now, there's going to be a lot of debate as we move on with the process. But what we have to do now is not take our eye off the ball of the crisis that's before us. And that is the fact that we have to move forward and vote to allow us to continue to pay our bills so that we do not default, so that we aren't weaker as a country. I don't want to be second best to China, to Russia, to any other country. And this, if we don't resolve this issue, that could put us in a perilous situation where it could weaken us as a country. But it also will hurt every single American. Every single American has families, senior citizens who rely on Medicare, who rely on Social Security. We have to focus on the short term. And the fact that Boehner agreed just 2 weeks ago to what Reid is talking about. Let's move ahead. Why 2 weeks ago does he agree? Because he's concerned about the far right wing of his party who don't understand the consequences of what are going to go on? That's what concerns me. And it's about Democrats and Republicans. We both have to roll up our sleeves and make this happen. That's the most important thing. Forget the party. Forget your idealistic situation and what you believe in. We're focusing on the debt. We're going to cut $2.2 trillion just for starts. Okay, but we have to deal with this crisis or we're going to lose our AAA bond rating, and that's very serious. A lot of people don't understand it, but that's what's going to happen.
People listening to this broadcast, the vote may be taking place on the floor about the vote may be taking place while people listen.
That's today.
That's today. Yeah. So the common wisdom is that Boehner's bill is going to pass the House.
It'll pass because they have the majority. But also, I don't know of one Democrat, including the very conservative Democrats, they're going to vote for Boehner's bill because it's a short term bill, and it's not going to help us solve the problem, and we can still lose our AAA bond rating. And that's one of the highest priorities we have to deal with now. Because if you have to pay more for your debt, how is this going to help us create jobs? Businesses are not going to want to go take a line of credit from a bank to hire new people to help grow and to prosper. And this is what's so serious. And that's what I can't understand how that in people who have been able, who've been elected to Congress, can't see how catastrophic this could be if we don't resolve this and resolve it quickly. And again, the indicators have started now. Since Friday, the Dow Jones has dropped 400 points. That affects people's retirement. It affects their mutual fund investment. It's going to affect everything that we do.
What about the argument that they've been making, that what's happening here is that this is a Republican-driven agenda, and Democrats are now talking about how much to cut, not how to take care of Medicare, Medicaid, building our cities, all the things that we have to do if you want to keep up. As you said, you don't want to be number two to China and everybody else, but China and everybody else are fueling their economies, and we're talking about pulling back.
Well, it's how you manage it. You know, I can go back to my experience as a county executive. Budgeting is about priorities. You know, we had to balance our budget in state and local government. And so when you're focusing on the basics, the things that to me are so basic are national security. You have to have security in your country, and you have to make sure you're strong enough that you will not be attacked by another country. You have to focus on the issue of education. What has made us the most powerful and the best country in the world is our education system. The fact, you know, with the GI Bill and our research and development, that has really made us such a great country. How can you say that people who can't afford college, they can't go anymore because they can't get a loan? We're not talking about giving free college. We're just talking about Pell Grants so they can go to college, and they will pay that back. So I think there's a lot of areas where we can focus on where we just can't afford. As a Baltimore County executive, I called it program review. We reviewed every program. There were a lot of programs that might have been a good program, but we couldn't afford them anymore. But the programs that we do keep, like education, like national security, like issues dealing with our environment, Chesapeake Bay, those are our priorities, and we will fund them, and we will fund them to the fullest extent, but we're going to fund them based somehow on those programs that were good programs, but we can't afford anymore. And that's part of what we're elected to do over here, is the budgeting process. But you can't just come in and pick a number and say, we're going to cut this amount. You have to have experience. You have to work. You have to have hearings. You have to do research and investigation, and then you make your decisions. And what bothers me about what's happening now, you have a new group who's come to Congress, and they're saying, well, let's just cut this amount. They haven't delved into the weeds, so to speak. They haven't learned what implication a cut here will have or a cut there will have, and especially when it comes to education and Pell Grants. That really concerns me, because we'll have a void in our country 5 years from now if our students who want to go to college, who want to be engineers, if they can't because they can't afford it.
So what do you think is going to happen? You have less than, what, 48 hours to get this done, 36 hours?
No. I'd like to – I'm more, I guess, of a positive type person who thinks that we're going to resolve it, because as Americans we always have in the end. But it's coming right down to the wire. I think what we have to understand and is that a lot of politics is about consensus. There's nothing wrong with compromising, because no one can get 100% of everything that they want. Or if they try to do it, usually it backfires. I think right now is that hopefully that Boehner, who has been in Congress for a long time, I understand he's a traditionalist, and that he will hopefully want to do the right thing. But he has to leave. He has to let this group, this far-right group, understand that there is a time to hold, a time to fold, and that they can declare victory because of the President of the United States willing to deal with the issue of the deficit. But to not now come together and to take us to this level, and the markets, it's already impacting now. You know, if they want to see it, it's happened. The Dow has dropped 400 points since Friday, and that's just the beginning. So I refer back to when we almost went into a depression years ago, when all of a sudden here we were in this deep recession, and we had to vote to stimulate the economy. All economists told us to do that. And the Democrats produced, and Bush, who was president, couldn't produce enough Republican votes, and the vote went down, and the stock market dropped. One of the highest percentages it's dropped since the Great Depression. Well, a week later, the Republicans came back, and those Republicans then voted, and then we started to move our way out of the economy. The problem here is that once you lose your AAA bond rating, you don't just get it back the next week or the next day. You might not get it back for a long time. And once you lose that, you will pay more money for your debt. So you can cut, you can make a lot of cuts, but you're just canceling them out because you're going to pay more money because we haven't done the right thing. So I know when this bill passes, it will go to the Senate. Reid has said it's not going to pass. Why do we want to keep doing this agonizing back and forth? Let's fix it once and for all. The bond rating agencies have basically said to us that if you don't make it a long term, that there's a good chance we will have to reduce your AAA bond rating anyhow. So I have confidence that in the end that the leadership will step up, the Republican leadership will step up, that we as Democrats have come a long way in agreeing to a lot of compromises. And it seems it's to a point now where the Republicans need to understand that they've come a long way. They've got their issue of spending on the table. There's results that are there. The only issue that I see now is the length of time. But why do you want to have inconsistency when the market, when the bond rating agencies have clearly said, if in fact you don't have a long term, you'll probably lose your AAA bond rating? That's where we need to focus right now.
Some people argue, and we talked to Andy Harris and others about this, is that there's a question of all of a sudden the Standard & Poor's saying they want us to cut this deficit by $3 to $4 million. Now, of course, they said we didn't really mean that, but it was said. So who's calling the shots here? Standard & Poor's and Moody's? Are they telling us what to do? Or are we doing this to interest the American people? Or are they the ones calling the shots?
Standard & Poor's. No. Standard & Poor's are bond rating agencies. We don't control them. And they're going to make an evaluation based on what they think is the right thing to do. We might not agree with it, but we have to deal with it. So why do we even put ourselves in a position of risk? I mean, I'm not willing to risk our country, our families, our status as a country, and worry about whether or not they're gonna reduce it or not. Because if they reduce it, there's impact. There's worldwide impact. There's no question. You know, again, I was a former county executive. I was able, through a great staff that we had and a lot of programs that we had in Baltimore County, to get three AAA bond ratings. There are only like 30, 40 counties in the country out of 3,000 that have AAA bond rating. It's nothing to fool around with. And we can't control it other than through our actions. It's really so we want people to continue to invest in the United States and to buy our bonds because we are AAA bond rated. But do you think that the countries will invest in us if we don't have AAA? But again, I'm getting back to the basics. If they reduce our AAA bond rating, we're going to pay billions of dollars more for interest, and that will affect every single family in this country.
Dutch, thanks so much. I know you got to go back on the floor, and good to be with you.
See you here in Washington, D.C., in the halls of Congress. All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM. The voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. Still here on Capitol Hill right now with Congresswoman Donna Edwards, who's meeting us here outside the hall where they've just finished voting. Congresswoman, thank you so much for doing this today again.
It's great to be with you.
So, from your perspective, I mean, this bill that Boehner has coming through, Speaker has, it's mostly going to pass. Is that correct, you think?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard whether they actually have the votes or not. I listened to part of the press conference earlier, and I would hope that if they're going to bring a bill to the floor, they have the votes for it.
So, I mean, you're one of the, in this delegation in the Congress, one of the most progressive members of the United States Congress. You've made it clear in a conversation we heard, at least the press reported, that you had with Steny Hoyer, Congressman Steny Hoyer, that you will not allow Medicaid, Medicare, any of those issues to be on the table. Is that right?
Well, let's say what I made clear. I was actually trying to clarify for our entire caucus that we were unified behind the idea that Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security benefits cuts should not be part of this conversation about the debt ceiling. I mean, most of us in our caucus have actually supported a clean debt ceiling. In fact, we took that vote a few weeks ago, and we would take it again tomorrow to end this crisis that we're supposedly in. And so I just wanted to make sure, and particularly for people out in my congressional district and across the state of Maryland, that we're going to protect our Social Security recipients and beneficiaries, because these are folks who, a lot of whom, especially among our seniors, only live on their Social Security checks, and that their health care is through Medicare. They don't have any other options. The children who are on Medicaid in the state of Maryland, they are children, because that is representative of the Medicaid rolls across the country, and they can't afford a benefits cut. And that is especially true when We have not asked those at the top 2% of the income ladder to give up a benefit, a tax break, that they don't need, and that's actually one of the principal drivers of the current deficits in our long-term debt.
Is it fair to say that this political dynamic around the deficit and the debt ceiling at the moment is really being driven by a Republican philosophical agenda? I mean, Democrats kind of backing off, saying we're going to cut deficits, we're going to cut this. Nobody's really talking about revenues or the future, where things are going to go. Is that what's happening at the moment?
Well, I think that the debate that we're engaged in now is the couple of hundred-year-old debate that we've been engaged in this country really since our founding, and it's about the relative role and responsibility of the federal government. And this debate is as true today as it was a couple of hundred years ago. And there are those in this Congress who believe by their actions that they would just as soon not have any role for the federal government. And then there are others of us who understand fully that protecting the social safety net is in part a federal responsibility, who understand that in order to rebuild our roads and our bridges and our water and sewer systems and create jobs, that the federal government is an important partner in there. And so in some ways, the debate that we're having is an old one. It just has a new twist because it's called the Tea Party.
But that twist, it seems at the moment, at least in classic terms, is putting America on the brink of default. And what do you think is going to happen? I mean, when you watched the vote, when people hear this, the vote will have taken place. Some people think that that Boehner's bill is going to pass. Other people think that they don't even know if the votes are there yet. They're not sure what's going to happen. The Senate has said no. We're not, at least in Reid's office, have said we're not going to accept it if Boehner's bill passes. And what's your analysis of what do you think is about to happen here?
Well, what we do know is that a vote will take place here in the House of Representatives, a vote that the United States Senate has said will see no light of day, a vote out of this House that the President has said he's not interested in a short-term extension and with these tremendous cuts and no revenues. And so I think that the debate actually just begins even as we're voting out, as I suspect we will be, the Boehner plan. So I think that this is the beginning. I think it's really time for us once again to say that it's important for us to pay our bills. Most Americans believe that. They believe it's important for the United States to meet its past obligations, and we can do that with a clean debt ceiling vote. And I think the president deserves just what every other president has gotten when it comes to this question. And so I view whatever takes place on the Boehner plan as the beginning of what we need to do by August 2nd to really resolve this crisis.
Are you worried, either as a representative or just as an American, that we're going to go over the cliff in a few days? That we're not going to be able to get to the point where these sides can come together, because it seems to be, I mean, the difference between Boehner's bill and Reid's bill seem pretty narrow, but the gulf seems wide nevertheless.
Well, I know what I'm convinced of. I'm convinced that there are enough people of goodwill who care not about whether they're Democrats or Republicans, but they care about the full faith and credit of the United States. They care about whether people who receive Social Security benefits will get their checks on August 3rd, whether our veterans and our military personnel will receive the pay that they deserved and that they earn. And they care that our markets are going to be stable so that we don't send the world economy into another recession or worse. And I think that we can get from here to there. I do believe that the easiest way to do that is with a clean debt ceiling vote. And it may be that these issues over the various cuts that are proposed to this program or that program can't be resolved in the next couple of days. I do know for certain that you can put a two-line clean debt ceiling vote on the floor of the House of Representatives, and that there are enough people of goodwill in the House and the Senate that will do the right thing by the American people and get that bill to the president to sign.
We don't even know right now what those cuts would be. We're talking about cutting $1.7, $2 trillion, $3 trillion from this budget. Nobody really has been able to be clear about where those cuts are coming from.
Well, and I think that that is precisely the reason that people like me are not prepared on behalf of our constituents to vote for or against something sight unseen without the line items being written down so that we can say, well, I want to, on behalf of my constituents, I'd make the choice not to support cuts to Pell Grants for our poorest children to be able to go to college. I'd like to make the choice to support food nutrition programs for our young people who need breakfast and lunch at school so that they can learn. I'd like to be able to support our education funding so that kids aren't sitting in classrooms that have 40 and 50 children in them. And until we see what those line items are, I think no one in this Congress should exercise the irresponsibility of voting for something that they don't even, when they don't even know what it is.
And some of the conversations we've had with other representatives today has to do with the role of Standard & Poor's and the role of Moody's in this whole debate, who create the rating system that will take us from AAA to AA, which people say would be very difficult to recover from. But the larger question is, who's driving the engine? I mean, who's driving the car? Is Standard & Poor's driving America, telling us what we have to invest in? Or are the American people, the American government, are we making those decisions? I mean, I started thinking about this morning after reading those articles about the role of Standard & Poor's, as I asked Dutch and some others, and Andy Harris, are we Greece? I mean, who is running? Who's determining what our future is going to be here?
Well, let me just say, first of all, I mean, this notion of people analogizing the United States to Greece or any other nation in this economy is ridiculous. I mean, the United States stands head and, you know, toes above all of those nations. We have a strong economy. We have a strong economic base. We know that we need to create jobs. We know that we need to rebuild our economy from the Great Recession that we've all experienced, but we're not Greece. As to the ratings agencies, I have to tell you, I do not place myself a lot of credit in these agencies that were so woefully and pitifully wrong over the last couple of years that resulted in our seniors losing, you know, a third of their retirement accounts because of their mishandling of the rating system. And so I don't think that we should be at the mercy of a rating system that has proven itself, frankly, to be a little untrustworthy.
That contradiction would have blew my mind as I was reading the articles, just the idea that these are the same agencies who said you could bundle the home mortgages and sell them across the globe and sell and resell them. And now they're saying that America has to cut whatever they're assuming, $1 trillion, $2 trillion, $3 trillion from our budget. I mean, that is what kind of maybe kind of step back. I wasn't even thinking about that until I read those things this morning in the paper.
Well, I think a lot of, from our Fed chairman to others, have suggested that we need to do some things to make sure that the rating system itself is accountable and independent so that all of us, you know, in various ways who are in the market can trust in that. I mean, I think that's important for us, but that's a completely different, that is really a different conversation that has to be had and debated here in the United States Congress. And I know what I want to do. I want to resolve this crisis by sending a clean debt ceiling bill to the President of the United States, and then I want us all focused like a laser beam on getting people back to work.
Two last things. I know you got to run. Describe for people what you mean when you say clean debt ceiling. What does that mean? What's the definition? What does that mean when you say clean debt ceiling?
Sure. I appreciate your raising that, because when you say clean debt ceiling, you know, I'm sure people's eyes glaze over. And what I mean by that is what every president, including Ronald Reagan, for 17 or 18 times, depending on how you will count, gets the authority from the Congress, the statutory authority, to be able to raise the debt ceiling to a limit that allows us to pay our bills. And so it's simple, two lines, giving the president the statutory authority to pay our bills up to the amount of our obligations. And that's what we owe this president of the United States. It's what we've owed other presidents of the United States, and it's what we owe the American people.
This is really nothing less than, to me, than the beginning or the midway of a pitch battle over the definition of who we are as a nation and which way we want to go?
Well, we're having a lot of the debates these days about the definition of the nation and the direction of the nation and what our competing responsibilities are. And I think that we have things to figure out clearly in terms of where priorities are for spending. And I'd like to place a few of those on the table as well. I'd like to say, while we have a priority of getting rid of tax breaks for the top 2% of income earners because it's contributing to our deficit and our long-term debt, I'd like to place a priority on getting rid of tax breaks for companies that offshore jobs and that receive tax breaks for operating in the oil and gas industry. I'd like to place as a priority getting ourselves out of Iraq and Afghanistan so that we don't continue to rack up both short-term and long-term debt. I'd like to see us place a priority on our spending and our budget that says, you know what, it wasn't a good idea to pass a prescription drug coverage that resulted in, you know, shifting millions of dollars into the pharmaceutical industry and contributing to a long-term debt because it was never paid for. So those are the priorities that I'd like to discuss with the American people, and then we really will have the money to rebuild our economy and to invest in our roads and our bridges and our sewers and our wastewater systems and all the rest, and all the while creating actual jobs. That's what I'd like to have the conversation about.
Congresswoman Dawn Edwards, thank you so much. Great to see you again.
Thanks, you too. Thank you all.
We're back with Congressman Andy Harris. He's been to the floor. We're back in his office again to conclude the conversation we began, and you'll be hearing other people we've interviewed in between that. But right now, good to see you once again, and you've been back from the floor.
Yep.
Anything stirring and exciting you had to tell us from your floor visit?
Well, no, we passed the rule to open the debate. They're debating the bill now, and, barring unforeseen circumstances, we should be voting within a couple of hours. Now, I anticipate that there's a possibility they could further amend the bill, but it would be procedurally a little difficult, but... You know, it's a difficult subject, difficult bill, so I don't rule that out.
Now, there are some of the congressional representatives we've talked to who think that nobody knows what's going to happen in this vote right now, that the votes may not be there, that there are Blue Dog Democrats who decided not to vote for the bill, originally thought might vote for the bill. So is your sense of the bill itself is in jeopardy of not passing?
It might be. I did find that a little strange that we have, of course, had five Blue Dogs vote for the cut, cap, and balance bill, which was a bill that actually, this is clearly a compromise down from the cut, cap, and balance bill. So I was a little surprised that it has become even a more partisan call at this point. Cut, cap, and balance was a bipartisan effort, and I think we have substantial support for a balanced budget amendment on the other side of the aisle. So I was a little surprised at that, but at this late point in the game that people would be making these partisan calls instead of philosophy calls or policy calls.
Don't you think that in the sense that everything we're talking about here right now on the Hill, these battles going on, are, for want of a better term, partisan battles? I mean, it seems the partisan philosophical party battles. I mean, it's an intertwined concept. I mean, that this what's going on here is a real schism over America.
But again, we have to. Although a lot of people align partisanship and philosophy, the cut, cap, and balance vote showed that there actually were a handful of Democrats who are willing to say, no, wait a minute, stop. This is good policy. That the idea of capping our spending, cutting spending now, and proposing a balanced budget amendment is good policy. So a week ago, I was much more hopeful that there was actually going to be a truly bipartisan effort to do this, which apparently is broken down. Because, when you have when you have parties whipping against a bill, as we're told that the Democrats are now whipping against this.
Whipping in terms of their party.
They're lobbying their people to not, so no one votes against that. That's kind of a change from a week ago, and I don't think that was happening on the cut, cap, and balance bill. So that's kind of a movement backwards in terms of this idea that we should be compromising on the bill. I think this bill is actually a pretty decent compromise as is. Now, it doesn't go as far as I want. I think we should have a balanced budget amendment in it, but I would have thought that would have attracted even more people from the other side of the aisle, especially this late in the game.
I mean, and
that doesn't bode well for the weekend.
It doesn't bode well for the weekend. And the Democrats we've interviewed today are saying that the same thing about the Republicans. They're saying that the Republicans have known, in this case, especially the newly elected members who are vaguely associated with the Tea Party movement, and as the Democrats have put it, are the ones who won't compromise, are the ones who are saying, this is the line we're drawing in the sand, and we're not going to budge.
Well, look, you know, the word on the street here is that this bill was the product of a negotiation between Harry Reid and John Boehner. So this bill was
this bill
a product.
This bill in the House right now.
That's right. So this bill is the product of compromise. And it's clearly the product. If you look at this bill versus the bill that we passed out a week ago, this is clearly a compromise position. It's it decouples the balanced budget amendment. It actually allows a bipartisan commission to make the decisions in the future of the second tranche of debt ceiling increase and cuts associated with it. So it has all the evidence of having bipartisan fingerprints on it, and yet now is being labeled by the minority in the House as, gee, this is the majority's idea and they want to ram it through. But it was developed in a bipartisan fashion, so that again, that doesn't bode well for the weekend when the sides appear to be retracting back from mutually negotiated compromise positions.
So, I just raised a question, a direct question that I kind of asked everybody in a sense here. Are you willing to allow the train to go over the cliff, to hit America defaulting on its? AAA rating to that could people arguing it could tumble the markets out, interest rates, people's adjustable interest rates could in their houses could soar, credit cards could just go out, be insane, Social Security checks not sent out, veterans benefits not sent out. I mean, are you willing to let that happen?
Well, with regards to Social Security checks, you'd have to ask the president about that. It's his decision. The Treasury Department can prioritize payments. So clearly nobody wants Social Security checks not to be sent out, and the president is the one who suggested that they won't get sent out. So you've got to ask him that question, you know, why he chose to frighten seniors. I understand the politics of that. I just disagree with the politics of that. I think that's a pretty vulnerable population to threaten in a way when the president knows that that will never happen. So I'm going to disagree with the president on that. This train is already halfway over the cliff. I mean, what America's coming to understand is they look at the fiscal situation in this country, and this is what S&P says and Moody's say quite clearly. We have already begun the downgrade process. The downgrade process does not depend upon what we do now entirely. They've already initiated the downgrade process because of our fiscal policy that's accelerated our deficits and debts in the past 3 years. And anybody who looks at a graph of the progression of our debt and deficit looks at it and goes, my gosh, we've already climbed that cliff. We're halfway over it. The question now is whether we can pull back. And to me, the pullback means we have to prove that we can control these debts and deficits going into the future. Some of us think that the book is already written on whether we get a downgrade. It's not a question of whether we do. It's only a question of when we do.
Now, you're the first person I've ever heard say this today. Are you saying that no matter what you do in the next 48, 52 hours here on Capitol Hill, that we're going to go from a AAA to a AA rating?
Yeah, I think
that's...
And we've had testimony from some of the folks who are from the rating agencies asked directly saying, what would it take? Would the Ryan plan avoid it? And they said, yes, probably. But we know the Ryan plan is dead on arrival in the Senate. It's just, look, the demagogue against the Ryan plan has been unbelievable. But they recognize that the Ryan plan puts you on a path to actually balancing and paying back your budget. We asked them, does cut, cap, and balance do it? They said, yes, it probably does. It avoids you from the downgrade. They get asked, does the Reid plan or the Boehner plan do it? And their response is, we can't really say, which I think means it doesn't. They've already said, we need $4 trillion in cuts. Neither of them do that. Or we need a permanent solution. Neither of them do that. I'm of the firm belief that no matter what we do in the next few days short of instituting the cut, cap, and balance plan, which we've been told would avoid it, we're going to have it anyway.
Now, there are others
that's very sobering.
Others would argue, Congressman Wubersberger and others would argue that's not going to happen. That AAA bonding is in danger. That they are putting America on notice because they seem to control the finances of America and the rest of the planet. That if you do not raise the debt ceiling, then we're going to dump the rating in America from AAA to AA, which would be a disaster for this country.
No, you don't think it would be a disaster? No, if you read the Standard & Poor's, and I urge you to go back and look at the Standard & Poor's website, read their report of July 21st, they specifically say it is not just raising the debt ceiling anymore. It has to be the raising the debt ceiling and proof that you will solve the structural debt and deficit problem in the United States. They are no longer going to be satisfied with just raising the debt ceiling. This was of concern to me because for the past 6 months, the Secretary of the Treasury has been asking for a clean debt ceiling increase. It becomes increasingly obvious that that would have been the quickest route to a downgrade, would have been to have said, you know what, clean debt ceiling increase, we're not going to really discuss it in any extraordinary way dealing with future debts and deficits. I urge you to go back and read carefully what S&P says. They say it's no longer just a clean debt ceiling. It's the debt ceiling accompanied by proof that you actually can control things into the future. And that makes sense.
But
increasing the limit on the credit card doesn't make you more credit worthy.
No, it does not.
And that's what a clean debt ceiling increase is. It's an increase in the limit on the credit card.
But the issue here, and some may be able to argue, is that we're entering a situation where literally Moody's, S&P, that it's now the financial world and Wall Street calling the shots, not you. Representing us.
Yes, as we said before, you know, we've allowed them in the we have made them be in the room with us because we couldn't handle our fiscal situation properly. So now the rating agencies are insisting being in the room with us. And that's understandable. I mean, their job is to keep an eye on the creditworthiness of various entities, including governments.
So what happens to America if that happens? What happens to our jobs? And that's for most people. What's going on in America now is about jobs and people's security. That's the thing that people are most concerned about.
Sure.
There's nothing I see from either side that's telling me they're going to help create jobs in this country. If this goes over the cliff, there'll be no local investment. People are not going to be hiring people. Our insurance rates are going to go up. Our interest rates are going to go up. And I don't see how you don't feel that's going to be a disaster.
Oh, it would be. Make no mistake about it. The debt ceiling limit will be raised. The only question is what accompanies it. There's no question. Now, look, come next Monday, it could be a three-day increase. It could be a one-week increase. It could be a two-week increase while negotiations go on. We have progressed beyond whether a debt ceiling increase is going to occur. The discussion entirely now is how large it is going to be and what accompanies it. That's the entire discussion now. Look, the Republican House voted for a $2.4 trillion increase in the debt ceiling. If someone had told you 2 months ago that the Republican House will vote for a debt ceiling increase, you'd think you woke up in a different planet.
And you're one of those who had an issue with that from the very beginning.
And I voted for it last week because it was coupled to a balanced budget amendment, and I felt that would provide confidence to the rating agencies that we actually are going to solve this problem long term, and you can trust lending America a buck because it's going to be able to pay it back.
Well, a couple of things. I'm just curious. I mean, I don't always go by polls, but this is a poll question. The majority of Americans, it seems at this point, are willing to go back to the Clinton and even eras beyond Clinton to go back to the taxation on wealth and the wealthiest people of America. That's what most Americans are ready to do in this, what we're facing today.
Sure.
But clearly that's not one that's acceptable to Andy Harris.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why, for two reasons. One is there's pretty good economic evidence that raising taxes in the middle of a recession is a bad thing economically to do, especially if you have other alternatives. The other one is that if you look at sovereign nations that have had debt and deficit problems in the past 20 years, and I mean not first, you know, first world nations. I mean Western Europe, and we'll get to Finland specifically in a second. If you look at how they solve their debt problems, a combination of spending cuts or tax increases, those nations that have been successful have a ratio of 10 to 1. The average nation that's been successful in coming out of that problem has had a ratio of 10 to 1 spending cuts to tax increases. But the most successful nation was Finland, which actually made cuts of 108% of their deficit and cut their corporate taxes with the extra 8% that they got from the cuts. So that in a period of, especially in a recessionary
You're talking
period,
about a country that's a social democratic country that follows democratic
and,
socialist
and
principles,
what they
no?
did, and what they did is it came to their attention, oh my gosh, we have to lower our tax rate. And that's how they solved the issue. So when you look historically, taxes in the middle of recession aren't good. And as economic policy, the evidence is that when countries get into this kind of problems, you don't tax your way out of them. Especially since we can satisfy the rating agencies with a balanced budget amendment.
So we
don't have to raise the taxes.
So let me ask you this question. Clearly, you're not a democratic socialist nor a social democrat.
I've rarely been charged with that.
Yes. So to me, as I just said to Congresswoman Edwards a little while ago, this to me is a battle that's taking place right now in Congress over the vision of the future of America. What is the vision that you have for government? Does it include Medicaid, Medicare? Does it include
We unleash this economy. We draw back the size of the government, especially the discretionary expenditures, and we attempt to unleash this economy to allow us to pay for those programs. Now, those programs will have to be modified. Anybody who looks at the data says we're going to have to eventually do something with Social Security. It may take maybe in the next 15, 20 years we have to do something. Medicare is a little more dangerous because within 8 years the CBO says we start losing, we go bankrupt in Medicare. And Medicaid is something that's gone way out of control and is disrupting states' budgets and the federal budgets. So a rational person says we're going to have to do something with that. But our best chance at being able to do all those things actually comes from unleashing the economy. And our sole focus should be on doing nothing that can hurt this economy from progressing. That's why I don't think tax increases right now should be on the table. I think that the companies are worried about that. In fact, I've offered, and it looks like the sense in Congress is that as a nation, we perhaps should lower our corporate income tax rates to attract businesses back to America and keep their manufacturing here.
Well, as the train rolls on, Congressman Harris, we will hopefully talk to you on Monday and see where we are, give you a call on the phone. Take
I'm
about
sure
10
we'll
minutes
still
or
be
so,
here in Washington.
I'm sure we are. Thank you so much for inviting us into your office and taking your time with our listeners and the people of Maryland today.
Okay.
Thank you. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.